You are listening to Sheep Might Fly, a podcast of serialized fiction written and read by Tansy Rayner Roberts. I really hope you all enjoyed the bromances, which finished up last week. I'm this close to finishing up the ebook version of the bromances, which will go out to my patrons later this week, and it'll go on general sale in October. So something a bit different this week. You've got questions. I thought I'd break up the fiction with a chance just to talk a little bit about me or what I do, and I asked for a few possibly podcast related questions and got in quite a few actually relevant to the podcast specifically, mostly the bromances in particular, which was not surprising, but that's really great, so thank you. So I'm going to answer some questions in future. If you have any particular questions you'd like to hear me answer on the podcast, I may make a regular feature of this, just a little breather in between the stories. Okay, so the first question I have is from Minika. And she says, perhaps not as relevant for a story you're writing as you go, as with the bromances, but for stories you read to us that you've already published, how do you decide where to put the breaks between episodes? Do you try to divide them into largely similar length episodes, or do you see where there are natural breaks in the story? That is a really great question. This sort of thing actually ties me up in knots all the time. I read through the story and I try to find those natural breaks. I'm keeping in mind that I want each episode to feel like something is happening. If there's a lot of intense stuff happening, then I'm probably more likely to divide it up into more episodes than less. Like, I usually go for about 4 to 6 episodes if it's previously written, just depending on the length of the story as well. The first story that I did for the podcast that had been previously published was Fake Geek Girl, and that was one that I had been thinking already about the possibility of the podcast when I wrote that for Australian Fiction Review. Review of Australian Fiction? I always get those mixed up. So that's part of why I wrote the story in chapters in the first place. Completely fell in love with the whole format of writing short stories in chapters. So now I will do that even if I am not specifically writing for the podcast. I like dividing stories up into these mini chapters, sometimes just numbered sections as well. I'm just completely in love with that format, which does make it more helpful when it comes to do a podcast version of the story. But as far as length, I didn't, like with Fake Geek Girl, I had that whole thing of, I was thinking about the podcast. I liked the idea of keeping episodes short rather than letting them run too long. I deliberately made, or when I was doing the podcast of Fake Geek Girl, I deliberately left in the chapter that's like a set list by Holly and it's super short. I don't know if that was the sort of thing that was really frustrating to listeners or if they liked it, but I always tend to run long rather than short, and I'm trying to teach myself brevity. So allowing myself to have really super short chapters is, I think it's good for me, and it goes a little bit against my programming. I like to challenge myself. When I'm actually writing the original stuff for the podcast, again, I don't want the episodes or the chapters to go too long, because my natural tendency is to write really super long. If it's going longer than about 1500 words, then I will say, look, I've got to end this chapter. I will allow myself probably a maximum of 2000. I don't think I've ever allowed myself to have a chapter longer than 2000, which turned into an episode for the podcast. But yeah, I think about this formatting stuff quite a lot, and I'm trying to force myself not to get too rigid about it. But on the whole, I think I'd prefer shorter episodes than long, as long as it's not, you know, as long as there's something that justifies it being an episode on its own. Because I really like the idea of this being like little 5-7 minute episodes, especially as my other podcasts have a tendency to become rather epic. Okay, Sidzel asked, are you planning to collect the stories together once you feel you're done with them into something physical that we can gift our friends for their birthdays? That's a very nicely phrased question. I'm absolutely planning to do probably print collections of the stories that I do for the podcast. That's part of the reason that I do them as, like, I really love this format of following the same characters across multiple short stories. That's something I'm really enjoying writing. I like for the podcast that I don't have to rein the stories in so much to the more saleable 5,000 word length. I can stretch out to the, you know, between 9 and 25,000 seems to be my sweet spot. And I really like the idea of doing print collections, whether I actually will go to publishers with that, which is one possibility, or whether I'll do them myself. At some point, there will be a Fake Geek Girl, the album. The Castle Charming ones, I'm pretty sure I'm going to be done with those. I was planning one story per season of the substantial stories. There may be one or two little extras, like I'm doing exclusive stories for the Patreon. So there might be a few little bits and pieces, but there's basically planned to be four proper novelettes or novellas in that series. So that one may be at book length sooner rather than later. Starting to suspect with the Fake Geek Girl ones, it's going to be across more than one. So we might have Fake Geek Girl, the first album, and then Fake Geek Girl, the difficult second album. I don't see myself stopping those ones anytime soon. The Dragon Circus ones, which are going to turn into a regular serial here on the podcast too, I only have four planned for those, which is a really nice length. If you have like four novellas, that makes a comfortable book length thing. I'm always thinking about turning things into books. So yeah, there will be print versions. I probably won't do print versions of the individual novellas, even if I have quite long ones like the Bromances. So that's something for the future. But you never know. I am learning how to make print books. That's one of those things I'm doing this year. And if it's anything like ebooks, I may get addicted, and then I'll be making print books of everything, including shopping lists. So you never know. Okay, Mel of Books and Sundry asked, you've been reading your own work for the pod for a while now. Do you ever find yourself wanting to change the stories as you go? Is there a difference with this between the written for the pod stories and the previously published ones? The answer to that is yes. Yes, I always want to change it. I've done public story readings here and there at conventions, occasionally at like local pub readings and stuff like that. And that was where I discovered the horrific fact that the best way to edit a story is to read it out loud. And sometimes you discover something really wrong with your story while reading it out loud. And it may be just like a word or two that needs to change. It may be that that's where you spot the unnecessary repetition or odd turn of phrase. There was one time I was reading a story in a pub, realised halfway that the ending was terrible, changed the ending while reading. I don't recommend that. But yeah, I am finding for the ones that I write for the podcast, they tend to have several drafts written before I actually do my recorded version. My recorded version is not actually the final version. Generally, when I am recording an original episode, there'll be a few things that leap out at me as I'm reading, and I will change them on the fly, and then I will go very quickly and enter those corrections in my my Word document, if I remember them all. Like, sometimes it'll just be a little language thing. I'll be like, oh, Sage wouldn't say it like that. He'd say it like this. Or I shift things around. I try and remember to write those down. But then when I'm getting them ready for the ebook, there will often be that extra read where I'm just like, oh yeah, I didn't mean to do that. Which is why, yeah, sometimes the ebook version will have some differences to the version that you heard in the podcast. So the podcast version is like the second last final edit, which does mean that if you read the book versus listening, you will often get usually quite slight differences of phrasing or whatever. This is what happens when you're doing it DIY. I'm editing these pieces myself, so I'm not answering to anybody. So I don't have that sense of it's quite done yet, even if it's been broadcast. For instance, I'm putting the Bromances ebook together. I realised as I got to the end of the last scene, I'm like, I wasn't quite 100% happy with how just the last couple of lines in which I'd left it. And I found another version of that last scene between Sage and Holly, which I'd written in a different... I'd originally had the idea that they came up with the road trip idea. I originally had the idea that that happened before they got home. So it's just like a slight structural difference. But I'd written that scene quite differently. And I went back and looked at it thinking, oh, I can put that in my Patreon newsletter as a little bonus extra. That'll be fun. Oh, there's some really good dialogue here that I like. And so, yeah, I changed the ending. It's like the plot isn't changed, but there's just the interaction between Sage and Holly in the last chapter is going to be slightly different in the ebook to in the podcast version, which makes the podcast, I guess, a time capsule. Yeah, so that sort of thing happens quite a bit. When I'm reading stuff that I've published before, or that has actually been, like, officially edited, published, it is in book form, I am turning pages while I read. I try not to do that editing on the fly, because there is a point at which you have to, as an author, accept that the story is done and it's finished and is out there. Having said that, if I find, like, a word that's wrong, something that was missed in editing, every now and then there'll be like a slight change. So the podcast version might not be 100% like the printed version. And there's a couple of times there are things where for the read aloud version, you do need to make a couple of slight changes just for clarity, where, you know, I might add an extra he said or she said, just to make it clear what's dialogue, because just sometimes a story that wasn't written with me thinking I'm going to be reading this out loud has slight changes. And again, when I write it for the podcast, there's a couple of things where I'll say, oh, I will change that for the print version. One example from the Bromances, there's a little sort of fake script. When Juniper talks about scenes where people talking, she'll put them in this like script format. And I had all these, you know, if you're doing swear words, but it's a character that doesn't want to say the swear words out loud, there's the comic book effect where you can just like jam your fingers on all the cute little symbols on your keyboard. And it's like, that's like hard. It's like fake swearing. You can't pronounce those for a podcast. So I said something like expletive deleted, which is a different thing. So yeah. Long story short, skip to the end. The podcast version is always going to be different to the prose version, to greater or lesser effect. So I guess what I'm saying here is if you really, really want to be a completionist, yeah, there's different versions of the stories out there. That's just how it is. And in this world of self-publishing, then published versions can be changed later on if you realise you've done something horrendous. Which is both good and bad as a writer. Okay, Ju asked what I first thought was my favourite amazing question and then realised was a hideous, horrible question that I couldn't possibly answer. So good one, Ju. Okay, no, look, thank you for asking, seriously. But yeah, so her question was, who would you cast if the Fake Geek Girl stories were picked up for TV, say if the people behind Worst Witch or similar were making it? This is a fantastic question. I love this question. I love playing casting games. And I really like casting stories as movie characters and sort of thing. Having said that, I have a couple of pretty major blind spots in my pop culture universe. One is, I just haven't been watching that much Australian stuff lately. And of course, obviously, all the actors would have to be Australian if I was casting this. The other is the problem of having characters this sort of age. Like, they're all 19, 20 in Fake Geek Girl. If you're playing casting games, chances are any teen show that you have been watching or are caught up on, especially if you're me, is already several years gone past, so any actor you think of as being a teenager is already in their late 20s and probably isn't no longer eligible to play the part. So I did think about it. I honestly couldn't come up with many. I would love it if any listeners would like to tell me what their casting preferences are. Any ideas? I might even come up with some awesome prizes if you could think of any that I particularly like. Because honestly, the ones that I could think of just were already like not quite age appropriate anymore. So it's playing the casting games with very young actors is always a problem. Because yeah, usually if they're playing a teenager, they're not going to be in the next show that they're in. And I'm just not caught up on the Aussie soaps, which would obviously have solved a lot of these problems. So yeah, I am not going to give any casting. If anybody would like to confirm like physical descriptions so they can play the casting game, look, please go for it. So yeah, that was a great and also terrible question. But that's mostly my failings and hang-ups. It was a very good question. All right. Faith sent me a question. Now, she actually sent me questions for a different Q&A that I had asked for an author newsletter that I do. But she asked one that was bromance specific, so I thought I'd put it here too. She said, "Do you have any recommendation for school slash college stories that might fill the void left by the left in me by the bromance's imminent conclusion?" Absolutely, I do. Look, college stories especially, I really love, and there aren't enough of them out there. I think perhaps because the YA pitch of novels is just so popular, and a lot of people just feel like once they get to college, are they not young adult anymore? What is young adult anyway? I don't know why there is such a dearth of college books out there for the YA audience, because I think they would eat that up with a spoon, frankly, and so would I. So I've got lots of recommendations though. Even as I was saying that there's not enough, I'm going to start with the non-magic school or college stories. This one is a high school one, but Ally Carter's I'd Tell You I Love You, But Then I'd Have to Kill You and the sequels are a fantastic boarding school story for spies. Particularly, it's a girls' boarding school. Yeah, for spies. That's all you need to know. It's awesome. She also has a really fantastic other series, YA series called Heist Society, which is, again, it's fun. It's con artist family kind of teen drama that I really love. But yeah, this one seemed like the most appropriate. So yeah, I'd Tell You I Love You, But Then I'd Have to Kill You. Her series also has some of the best titles ever of YA novels, which is, you know, that's a pretty big statement, but I'm prepared to stand behind that. So that was Ally Carter. I also really liked Diana Peterfrin's original Secret Society Girls series. This is a university series, and yeah, it was about based around those semi-mythical, but let's face it, they really exist, American secret societies in the Ivy League universities. That idea of the rose and skull or whatever, you know, you belong to the secret society and then you're supposed to get all these major perks later in life because the people you met at the secret society in college are all now super rich and successful and in positions of power. So these are kind of like thriller romance friendship stories set at college. I really, really love them. So that's the Secret Society Girl series by Diana Peterfrin, who also wrote those really cool unicorn boarding school stories, very Buffy-like, Rampant and Ascendant, I think. But yeah, they're also very good. Basically, everything by Diana Peterfrin is good. And of course, my favourite college story that pretty much anybody who knows me knows that I love is the webcomic Check Please, which it's fantastic. There's not nearly enough of it. It's about hockey bros and baking. But it is lovely, but also the surrounding fanfic is also just really great. I love the fan community around Check Please, and the fanfic based around Samuel University just gives me life. Speaking of fanfic, I think that part of my complaints about there not being enough college stories is I think most of the college stories that I read are actually in the fanfic universe rather than actually printed books, which is why I think they would be super popular if there were more of them in book form. I love College AUs, that's alternate universe, and I like that for pretty much any fandom that I like. If you're going to put them at college and have them sharing dorm rooms and, you know, friendship dramas and romance dramas and all that stuff, I just love those to bits. And I would read those across multiple fandoms. Probably my all-time favourite college AU is from the Musketeers fandom. Cherry Feather has written this, and it is an ongoing, unfinished serial. Cherry Feather is now super into Star Wars fandom, and clearly the Musketeers fandom is closing up now that there is less canon being produced. Well, there's no more canon being produced. I'm aware of the problem of recommending a fic to you that isn't finished. Having said that, it's already super long and it is amazing. And every few months she does put out another chapter. But the relationship as expressed through the series so far is just so worth reading, regardless of the fact that it may never be finished. So Unus Pro Omnibus, Omnes Pro Uno is the fic. It's set at a modern-day college, and all the characters from the Musketeers are there, and they belong to the fencing. They're basically varsity fencers. And it's the most beautiful, angsty, drama-filled college story you could possibly read. Athos is the main point-of-view character. I'm pretty sure anybody who knows my love of Musketeers knows that he's basically my favourite. But it's just gorgeous. It ultimately resolves as a poly romance between Athos, Porthos, and Aramis. That's the central relationship. But it's much more like that aspect is there, and that's amazing, and it's a very hot romance. But it's also the stories of friendship and, you know, fencing at college and dramas and angst and everything. I don't know. It's beautiful. So that's Cherry Feather's Unus Pro Omnibus. Omnes Pro Uno. I also super love, I will read any Teen Wolf college fic. I will read any Hogwarts Year 8 fic. I just love college AUs. So now, the last few recommendations I have are actually published works which have some aspect of magic and college or school, which is what the original request, I think, was for. Rainbow Rowell's Fangirl is just a beautiful piece of work. It's not magical fiction, but it is about somebody who is, you know, a part of fandom and fan community at college and sees college through that lens. And then the fandom that she is a part of is... Then, this is hard to explain. So then what Rainbow Rowell did was she wrote the Simon Snow novel, which is part of the fictional universe that her heroine from Fangirl is so obsessed with. And the novel, which is called Carry On, is just amazing. It obviously owes an awful lot to the long history of Harry Potter fanfic. There is a relationship there and a lot of other fanfic of other things. But it's just gorgeous, and it's fun. At a slightly younger age group than the stuff that I'm writing, the new Worst Witch TV show on Netflix is amazing. The original Worst Witch books are also great. The adaptations have always been good, even the one in the 80s, because it had Diane Rigg and Tim Curry in it. But I really like the new Worst Witch series. I particularly like the way that Mildred is set up as a outsider character, as effectively a chosen one character who comes into this strange, bewildering world of magical school and actually isn't very good at it because she doesn't have the cultural background, because she's coming to it new. It's like walking into a school where everybody else has been doing their advanced lessons as part of their casual life for the last 12 years, and you don't even know which end of a cauldron is up. I love the new Worst Witch series, and it's a really interesting, mostly all-female narrative, great school stuff, great friendship stuff. Also, to be honest, I'm reading the Percy Jackson books. I really love those. They don't really focus around the school environment so much because most of the books are quest based, but the Half-Blood Camp and its role as a school type, a boarding school type environment, I'm very fond of. So yeah, those are pretty great. Gunnacrig Court is a comic that my daughter loves to bits, and I'm currently reading my way through with her occasionally putting her nose over my shoulder to say, "What are you up to? And have you read this bit yet?" Very cool. It's a very gothic, strange boarding school with a mixture of steampunk and science and paranormal stuff and flat out magic. And there is a really interesting relationship between the students of the present day and the teachers who had their own backstory from when they were students, and there's a lot of mysteries and a lot of strangeness. And yes, that's Gunnacrig Court. That's great. And the big book that I want to recommend to everybody at the moment is Sarah Rhys Brennan's In Other Worlds, which is wonderful. It's just so good. It's a very different take on the magical school aspect because it's a portal fantasy, but the school is more of a military camp than a boarding school, and it is about learning through more of an apprenticeship system. But it's also very much about a militaristic fantasy world where war and battle is seen as more important than anything else, whereas the people who actually write the treaties and do the politics and read the books are seen as lesser, and why that's a problem. And we have this wonderful, wonderful main protagonist who's so sarcastic and points out everything that's wrong with the world and everything around him. It's a hilarious book. It's a very sad book in some places. It's very angsty. It has gorgeous romances, bisexual main character, lots of really interesting queer narrative and stories about romances and friendships and them dipping back and forth. So I think if you like the romances and the Belladonna University stuff, then you'll absolutely eat Sarah Rhys Brennan's new book up with a spoon. And then you can go and read all her other stuff, because why would you read anything else if there were Sarah Rhys Brennan books that you haven't read yet? Okay, that's it. That's me. I've answered all the questions. If you have questions in the future, I may do more of these. If you absolutely hate me talking at you instead of reading you stories, let me know that. It's all good. All right, thank you for listening to Sheep Might Fly. You can sign up to my author newsletter for updates. Follow me on Twitter at TansyRR or at Sheep Might Fly. Find me on Facebook at TansyRR Books. And if you like this podcast, consider supporting me at Patreon, where you can receive all kinds of cool rewards and exclusive stories, including a fake Geek Girl prequel, for a small monthly pledge. So next week, we're starting a new reprint serial, Did We Break the End of the World, from the excellent anthology Defying Doomsday. See you next week!